Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is our friend Charlie Bird. Welcome, Charlie.
Hi, thank you. It's good to be here.
Really glad to have Charlie here. As many of our listeners know and our community know, Charlie is Cosmo at BYU.
Was Cosmo.
Good point. And did that for 3 years and is no longer Cosmo. But I became aware of Charlie's story, like many of our listeners, with the op-ed he did in the Deseret News on February 26th. And we'll link to that in the podcast, where Charlie bravely came out as gay and has really been a helpful story for many to understand our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. So Charlie is here on the podcast. He's going to come with about 10 or 12 questions that he's been asked by many people since he came out. And Charlie and I thought this would be a good platform in a longer conversation where Charlie could answer those questions that he's been getting for the people who are connected to his story. So welcome to the podcast, Charlie.
Thank you.
Give us just an introduction of who you are, where you grew up, what your degree is at BYU, what you're doing now.
I grew up in a small town called Willard in Southwest Missouri. I went to BYU, obviously graduated with a degree in global supply chain management and a second degree in Spanish. And I graduated in June 2018 and shortly thereafter moved to New York City. And that's where I am right now working.
And what kind of work are you doing in New York City, Charlie?
Like international consulting. I get to travel a lot and I love to travel. So it's been a good fit so far.
What countries have you been to in the last few months?
It's a list.
It's a list.
It's a long list. But I've got to travel some over Africa, and I travel for fun quite a bit too. And so Europe, South America, it's been great.
And you served a mission. Tell our listeners where you served, Charlie.
Yeah, I served in the Redlands, California mission. It's about 60 miles east of Los Angeles.
And English speaking?
Spanish.
Spanish speaking. Did you know Spanish before you were called?
I knew quite a bit. I've been taking Spanish classes since I was about 14, and I'm kind of a nerd about Spanish. I love it. So I was okay when I entered the MTC, but definitely got better.
And is Spanish part of your career right now in New York?
Yeah, it actually is. I do quite a bit of translation and work heavily in all the South America operations. So,
did you grow up in an LDS family, Charlie? Are you a convert? Is your family in the church?
I grew up in an LDS family, and all of my family is still active except for my father.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I was very involved growing up, and all of us, we go to church as a family. We worship, family home evenings, read scriptures together.
And I assume you grew up in an area of the country where there's just less LDS people. You were in the minority, I assume.
Right. In my ward, my senior year, there were 4 of us in my high school, in my grade. So I think my community, comparatively to other places in Missouri, was a little more mm-hmm. LDS, but not really. We were definitely the minority in high school.
And what age was your goal to get to go to BYU? If I'd met you at 10, 12, 14, do you have BYU flags hanging up in your room growing up, or was this later towards the end of high school?
No, you know, both of my sisters, my older sisters went to BYU. One of them transferred to Utah State. We were never really loyal to the BYU brand. I actually almost went to Vanderbilt in Tennessee.
Good school.
I was close to going to Vanderbilt, and ultimately I just felt like I shouldn't, and I went to BYU instead. And at first I wasn't entirely sure why, but it definitely turned out to be the right decision.
And we'll ask this in later, but that's just helpful overview for our listeners. Talk about some of the questions you're getting. I've got a list here, so we'll just get into them. Why did you come out?
Why did I come out? Well, I feel like mostly that question has been asked to me in regards to this public coming out, this Cosmo the Cougar double coming out, if you will. And the reason I did it is because I had a voice, I had a platform that I knew would be visible. And I mean, I've been watching people and meeting people, and there's so many people that feel voiceless and alone and vulnerable and aren't sure what they're doing or who can listen. A lot of people who feel like they don't have role models, and just a lot of isolation. And the more I'm involved in the LGBTQ LDS community, the more I see it. It's very prevalent. And I felt that way. I've been there, and I was there for quite some time. And so it's interesting because I never planned on coming out publicly as gay or as Cosmo. I kind of liked having that secret. And I didn't think I'd be confident to come out as gay. I just, it wasn't something that I thought I could do, right? That's something that somebody else.
It's honest.
But I didn't think I could. I wasn't ready for it. But a few months ago, I just kept feeling that I should do this. And actually, I was kind of fighting with God a little bit because I really felt pulled and inspired to write this article and try to use this platform that I've been given to give other people a voice and try to create understanding and start conversations. And for like 3 months, I was like, no, no, no. I was like, come on, God. Like, I don't want to come out as Cosmo, and I want my sexual orientation to be something more sacred in a way, mm-hmm. you know, just like personal, me and my family, my friends. And I didn't want it to define me. I didn't want it to be defined by it, by other people. But,
and that makes sense.
Yeah. I thought so, but it turns out, that wasn't my hand to play. And this is what I ended up doing, and I don't regret it. It's been amazing so far.
So it sounds like this is something that you felt impressed to do because of God guiding you versus some other reason.
Absolutely. And I was very prayerful about this article, about even just the idea of it. And as I was writing it, I would fast and pray and really try to make sure that I was doing what was best for me and what was best for the community.
Why do you think God wanted you to come out?
I think there's quite a few reasons. As it pertains to me, I think he wanted me to come out because I needed to gain confidence and learn how to trust God over everyone else. Like I said, if you would have told me 2 years ago I'd be doing this, I would say you're crazy. It didn't seem probable, but I think I've had to work really hard to build a personal relationship with the Savior and with God. And this experience has taught me that sometimes what I think is best for me isn't actually what's best for me or what I'm supposed to do. So there's that aspect. And the second is there's a lot of hurt and heartbreak and misunderstanding. There's a lot of broken families and broken people, broken souls. And I think the Heavenly Father wanted me to come out in this way because it could start conversations, hard conversations, and try to help people heal and at least search for answers.
Really makes sense. And Charlie offered a wonderful prayer before we started recording, and I just feel his good spirit and his closeness with God and Christ and the deep spirituality that Charlie has. He doesn't want me saying that about him too much and be embarrassed or throw something at the table, but that's one of my impressions of meeting with our gay Latter-day Saints, is just a deep spiritual reservoir that they've had to work to sort of navigate this road in a love and a relationship with God and the power of the atonement to help them walk this road. You kind of touch on this, Charlie, but why is coming out important? Because some people would say, well, I'm straight, I don't need to come out. And so why, if you're LGBTQ, do you need to come out?
Well, I think if you're straight, you don't need to come out because the world is predominantly straight, and that's fine. It's just how it is. But if you try to reverse the roles a little bit, especially me being at BYU, living in Provo, come on, dating culture is out of control. And everyone's trying to get me to go on dates with people and asking me why I'm not dating or not married. And I'm getting assignments from almost like homework. Like, you need to go on a date with this person. And it's stressful and it's weird and it's annoying. And it's funny because a lot of gay people I know say they're almost annoyed that we have to come out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But it's necessary because the assumption is that you're straight and people assume you are. And because of that, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance almost. And it creates a lot of inner turmoil and feels weird when everybody thinks you're something that you're not. That's just the main assumption. And so I think that's the main reason why generally people come out, is because they want to remove any preconceived notions of who they are and show who they actually are to kind of fill that gap. And also there's a lot of society, and especially within the LDS faith, there's a lot of shame and perceived shame and isolation that come with this. And it's very freeing and liberating to be able to come out and feel courageous and kind of take steps in this direction that once looked impossible and kind of shadowy.
Why do some people think when you come out, they automatically go to commandment keeping? So you haven't said anything in anything I've seen written here where you're not committed to, you haven't said anything about, you know, not keeping commandments. You just came out. And some people then say, well, they just so quickly link that with not living the law of chastity.
Right. If I can be a little bit candid, I think a lot of times people reduce sexual orientation to sex. And I disagree with that notion. To me, my sexual orientation being gay is so much more than that. And it's kind of it kind of takes away from who I am if people think about it that way. So I think me being gay has really affected the way I see and understand and treat women. Absolutely. And my creativity and kind of this viewpoint of, in which I see the world. And it's so much more than sex, you know, and to boil it down to that and kind of reduce it to that, I feel like is a misconception. And also I think there's labels and the semantics of it all. Some people, the word gay is very jarring, and to other people, the word gay is totally fine. And words are placeholders for meaning, and sometimes the meaning is different to different people. So I think you should, I mean, Christ taught us that we shouldn't judge, and just because someone says they're gay, you can't make any assumptions about their life or their choices without getting to know them.
I agree with that, and that's very thoughtful. I know that I've tried to, when I see a single straight person or a single gay person, I try not to sort of have a higher standard or quickly go to, are they keeping the law of chastity or not? I just try to treat everybody the same, and it's not really my job to wonder about something like that.
Yeah, I don't think if someone says they're straight, we don't automatically think, oh, I wonder if they're keeping the law of chastity. I don't think that's our place. That's between them and the Lord, and those are their choices. And I don't think it's right to judge people based on no information.
And I love when I've been trying to understand more about why people come out, and you articulated that so well, Charlie. I love this quote by Brené Brown. Fitting in is about assessing a situation and becoming who you need to be in order to be accepted, which you probably tried to fit in for a long time into our heteronormative culture. But
right.
Belonging, on the other hand, doesn't require us to change who we are. It requires us to be who we are. And that, to me, just seems so much more freeing and emotionally healthy. And I don't know if you felt just better emotionally and just slept better at night and just been at more peace since you've come out.
Yes. Short answer, yes.
Even though you've been inundated with thousands of messages and you don't have much time. So that's helpful on why to come out. And my experience is it's, you know, not everybody needs to come out and not everybody will. And I think that's okay. But more do need to come out. And it's just about people knowing that they will love them for who they are and that that doesn't change. So share with our listeners, when did you know you were gay?
This is a really interesting question, and it's one I get a lot. In fact, when I finally came out to my mom about a year and a half ago, she told me she loved me and nothing changed, and she wanted me to be happy no matter where life takes me. And her first follow-up question was, when did I know? I think, and I've really tried to figure out when I knew, but it's a little bit complicated. I knew I was different always. Is my earliest memories, I knew I was different from other boys. And I didn't know why. I didn't have the words to describe that or the way to articulate that, but I knew I was different. I just didn't know why. And growing up, there was always this kind of separation, this difference, and I wasn't sure what it was. when I was maybe 13 or 14, I figured out what it was. And I was like, oh no, because I realized I was attracted to guys. And it's interesting, though, because this, I mean, I grew up in Missouri. I grew up on a farm. I grew up in the LDS church. So being gay was almost a non-option. It wasn't a thing. And I was raised to believe that it was a choice and it was something that happened to people because they chose it, right? So I ended up not really owning my sexual orientation, and I was running from it for a long time.
It's honest.
I got very good at lying to myself. Looking back, it's obvious to me that I would have a crush on a guy. But back then I would be like, I feel this way because he's cool and he's popular and he's good at sports, and I want to look like him. I want to be like him. And that's why I have this kind of like, that's why I'm drawn towards him. On the flip side of that, I got really good at pretending and telling myself I had crushes on girls, because it was just almost the complete opposite, because there'd be a girl who was cool and popular and I wanted to be like her and I wanted her to like me and kind of be in that realm, you know? And I would tell myself that that was a crush. And so I would flip those two in my mind. It's weird, and I don't know if people are going to understand this. I don't know if I understand it, but I always knew I really was gay so deep down, but it was something I couldn't even touch or look at or think and not even begin to articulate. So there was always this undercurrent of like somberness, like I know, but I just wouldn't look at it because I felt like I couldn't.
How was your emotional health during these years? Were you in a real dark spot, or were you okay?
I think it flipped. I've always been a really social person, and in a lot of ways I was really emotionally healthy, but there was dissonance. So it hadn't hit me yet. It hadn't caught up with me. And a lot of my emotional health was taken up in different family issues as well. So it was almost like I wanted to shelf it, and it was easy to shelf because there were more pertinent things at the time. That being said, I cut out this deal with God almost that, and also I want listeners to know that, I mean, I've been in it. Like I was very, and I still am. I read the scriptures and I pray, and I was always at seminary, and I was like type A LDS member, and I enjoyed it. It's been a really big part of who I am. And I wanted to serve a mission. There was this kind of freak out. I didn't know if I'd be able to, because deep down I did know I was gay, and I knew, quote unquote, knew that that was wrong, that that was bad, that that was sin. And I just tried to avoid anything gay. I avoided gay people, and I didn't watch Modern Family because it promoted gay marriage. And I didn't listen to certain artists who supported gay marriage. I thought if I completely ran from it, then it could never catch me.
And I don't think that's a sign of weakness. I think it's a sign of strength and just managing a really difficult road, the fact that you kind of walked this way.
I think, I mean, look, you can't look at your childhood through adult eyes.
Right.
Knowing what I know now, I wish I would have kind of faced up to it earlier. But I was honestly doing the best I could with the knowledge that I had. And that's what I was doing. Like I said, I decided to go to BYU. I wanted to go on a mission. So I cut out this deal with God that I was going to be a fantastic missionary, and I was going to come home and the atonement was going to heal this broken part of me. That's what I believed in. And I believe in Jesus Christ. I've seen the power of the atonement work miracles. And I was like, okay, this part of me is broken. It's messed up. Christ can heal me. So I'm going to be a great missionary. And that's not why I went on a mission. I don't want anyone to think that that's the only reason. But I was hoping that would be kind of a positive consequence. Loved my mission, served. It was amazing. It was actually really easy for me to be gay as a missionary because I wasn't thinking about myself ever. I almost didn't have time to. Plus, I had this kind of like side deal, you know, with God. I was like, it's all going to work out. Came home.
And that's just, I know there's a lot of listeners that are gay and wondering about a mission and wondering if they're going to and most of my experience is your experience, Charlie, is that most missionaries are fine. They don't fall in love with the companion. They're just part of this brotherhood of a greater cause. And it's really a very wonderful time. No one's talking about dating.
Right.
And some of those things, and everybody's just part of this greater cause. And so I don't know if that's the way you felt, but I've certainly heard a lot of stories that this is a great time or a less difficult time.
Yeah. For me, it was less difficult. It was kind of a break from worrying about my sexuality. It came with a hard consequence at the end, though, because I came home and like we're expected to, I started dating girls, and I would had this idea that I was going to be able to live the life that had been kind of laid out for me, that I was going to be able to marry in the temple and raise a family and take my daughters to ballet. And of course, it was always a daughter I wanted doing ballet.
That's great.
And I was trying. I tried really hard, and I was dating so many girls. All my friends thought I was a player, and I was dating these amazing, wonderful girls who are just some of the most genuine, beautiful people I've ever met, and it wasn't working. It wasn't working, and that's when I started getting into this dark place of why and what, because this was supposed to be healed, you know? I wasn't supposed to be this way anymore. I was supposed to be normal and good. And I was in a very dark place, and I don't know exactly how, but I didn't let it completely destroy me. And I caught early warning signs of me not being happy, even though everything in my life was going perfectly. I mean, it was great. I'd made the Cosmo, and I was doing well, getting good grades. Everything was happening well for me, but I saw all these signs of how I was going into kind of like a depressed state, and I couldn't sleep. And that's when I decided that I was going to quit running from this and look at it head on. And I kind of took this step of courage to look at this and try to assess my life and who I actually am. And this was maybe three and a half years ago. And so that's kind of when my real gay journey started. I feel like I'm talking a lot. What was the original question?
You're doing just fine. And this is what we like from our guest, Charlie. We want to hear from you. And so it kind of leads into, now that you're coming to terms with your own orientation, hitting it head on, which takes courage and well done, is you then come out to people. And it sounds
first I had to come out to myself.
Good point.
Coming out to myself was harder than anything. Because, especially because I'd become very homophobic. I trained myself and conditioned myself to that gay was wrong, that gay was bad. And like I said, I wouldn't even listen to Lady Gaga because she supported gays, and that was wrong. And so I really had to look at my life and grapple and kind of like take away all of these false ideas that I had implanted in myself because I was trying to change. And I had to rely on the Lord. I think the hardest thing about this whole gay LDS experience is that there's not answers. There's not clear answers. And a lot of the answers that have been given to me, I disagree with. And they were not helpful to me, and they were hurtful. And so in a way, it's been a blessing, but it's been very difficult because I've had to ask God things and really try to grapple with myself and with the Savior and what it is. And ultimately, I thought the atonement would heal me and fix that I was gay. That's not what happened. But it did fix my heart. And it did fix the way I saw myself. Because the way I was projecting homosexuality, it kept coming around and hitting me because I was gay. Does that make sense?
It does.
And I'd conditioned myself to think and act this way. And it was just very self-deprecating and hurtful. And it took me into very low, dark places. So I don't believe that the atonement heals gayness.
Agreed.
But I believe it heals your heart. I didn't start becoming happy until I realized that my sexual orientation was God-given and is an integral part of me. Once I made this flip, it was a transcending experience, and almost immediately I felt peace, and I felt, rather than this weight and this darkness pulling me down, I felt like I was being scooped up by the Lord. And to anybody listening, I believe that sexual orientation and your identity is God-given, and it's beautiful, and it's spiritual. It has a spiritual aspect. I talked earlier about not reducing things down to sex, and I think that's important because I believe that there is a spiritual component to this, and my soul, in one way or another, is connected to this gay energy. What a horrible, I don't know how to describe it.
I think you're doing just fine, Charlie.
And just that one flip in my mindset and understanding has taught me that, like, I believe I was gay before this life, and that it's part of my soul, and after this life I'll be gay too. And that moment, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when I had this revelation, this intensely intimate personal relationship and this conversation with the Lord. And that's when I started healing, and that's when I kind of came out to myself, and it was beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful experiences of my entire life.
It's pretty sacred, Charlie. I mean, I'm really touched by what you just said, and I think it's really helpful for our listeners.
From there, I was like, okay, this isn't going to change, so I guess I should tell some people to try to, like, build support, because even still, I needed support, and I needed people to see the real me that I'd been running from and hiding from. Yeah, that's when I started coming out. I think your follow-up question was, how did my family react?
Yeah.
They've been great. I love my family. They've been so amazing. And like I said, I came out to them all individually. The first person I came out to was my cousin, slash my best friend. And that was really good because it made me more confident. And it was very, it was the dramatic, crying, kind of like erratic coming out, because it was the first time I'd come out to anyone. And I don't want to talk too much about that. It's really special. And but that experience gave me more confidence to come out to the next person.
Do you remember what he or she, your cousin, said that was helpful to you, or did they just listen? Yeah, do you remember?
She listened. And I was sobbing for like 20 minutes and trying to talk. And looking back, it's all very embarrassing. I'm usually more in control than that. But she listened to me. I know exactly what she said. She said, "Charlie, I love you. This does not define you to me. I love you for who you are." And then later she was like, "I kind of already knew." And I was like, all right, come on. But that was great, because I think it's something that I had been defining myself negatively by this my whole life, you know? And so for her to kind of shed light on the good parts of me was really eye-opening. And it's something that, it's a perspective that I didn't have at the time.
Talk about coming out to your mom.
I want to talk about coming out to my sisters, if that's okay.
Do that.
The next person I came out to was my sister, and I'm going to embarrass her for a little bit. I did this like Instagram poll, you know, for these questions, and she rallied up all her friends to ask the question, who's your favorite sister? So it's not you, Anne. I love all my sisters the same.
You have how many sisters, Charlie?
I have three.
Three sisters.
But I am talking about her, so I'll throw her a bone. That was an interesting coming out, because it was very easy. That was the easiest coming out. And I'm gonna give the people a tip, at least that worked for me. My sister had kind of figured, she'd been watching me date and talking to me. And later she told me that the way I was talking about dating girls was not normal. And she knows me. She knows that I've always been creative and just seen the world differently. And so she kind of had these feelings that I was gay and was wondering how to help me. So rather than say anything, she started researching and reading things and then planting little seeds. So for about 6 months, she was sending articles just here and there, and links and blog posts. And I remember one night she even texted me and my brother in a group text. She's smart. Listen to how she did this. She texted me and my little brother. My little brother's like your classic high school jock, like straightest guy in the world. There's there's like no even question his sexual orientation. But she texted both of us in this group text and just talked about how if either of us were gay or dealt with same sex attraction, I don't remember how she put it, but she wouldn't care and she would love us the same. And she just really needed both of us to know that.
That's cool.
And so she was outwardly giving signs and hints and saying, I'm safe. I'm okay. Whenever she was almost saying, whenever you're ready, you can trust me. And so, that made it so much easier to come out to her. Cause she didn't assume that I was gay, but she gave every sign to say that if I was, I would be safe with her. And that was so integral and so helpful. And so many people ask all the time, how can I show love and support or show that I'm a safe person? It's very easy because I promise if there's someone who hasn't come out and they're gay and they're struggling, they will see everything. And they know when you share a post or say something. At least for me, I was watching and I saw everything. And I was hypersensitive and hyper-aware. And I'm really grateful to her for being very classy in the way that she did that, but also showing that she'd be okay.
I love that.
And so one by one, I started coming out to my family. She told me about I was a little worried to come out to my other sister, and which was ridiculous looking back, because in my sister Anne kind of gave me, she was like, oh, like Janine's going to be fine with that. It's going to work. Like, don't worry, you can come out to her. So I did. And it was great. Then I waited a while. The next person I came out to was my brother. This is a fun one too. Is it fun to hear coming out stories?
It is. Okay. It's really helpful.
I was hiking Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania.
Wow.
Yeah. We were backpacking and me and my brother were just kind of on a clip and we were going fast and just feeling really good. And we were in the jungle and it was amazing. And I was thinking, I just got in this thinking mode, and he asked me what I was thinking about, and I was like, oh no. And I just knew I had to come out to him. Whenever it's time for me to come out, or whenever it was, I guess I'm kind of done coming out. I got this certain feeling. I know the feeling. It's exactly when you have to bear your testimony. That's the feeling. And to me, it kind of became this, it's okay to come out to this person. So I told my brother and I said, Sam, I'm gay. And he denies this, but I know this is how he reacted. He was like, dude, that's like the worst joke ever. You're not gay. He's like, you can't pull that over on me. And I was like, no, but really, I am. And he kind of had this like, whoa moment. And
is he high schooler age?
Yeah, he was 18.
18.
And I mean, he was perfect. He was like, bro, I love you and cool. I don't care. He's like, you're my brother and we're close. Like we're brothers. We're tight. And
cool.
And he was the first, I was scared to come out. It was harder for me to come out to guys than girls for some reason.
Yeah, that's been my experience listening to stories.
Yeah, it is. It's much harder. But he was very understanding. And So then later over Christmas, I came out to my parents. My mom was amazing. She said, like I mentioned, she loved me and she'd support me no matter what and just wanted me to be happy. And my family's been incredible. And they've asked questions. I think this is important too, or at least it was for me. I told them they could ask anything and they did ask questions and it really helped solidify our understanding and build trust that they weren't going to offend me just because they didn't know and I wasn't going to push them away and hide things anymore.
I think I know the answer to this question. When you're talking about the atonement didn't change me being gay, if we're sitting across the table, listeners, if I passed a button across the table that says make me straight, it actually worked if you pressed it. Would you press it, Charlie?
No, I wouldn't. And I'm so glad that that button didn't exist because it would have, like, my progression and and the way I've come to understand things, if I would have been straight, I wouldn't be the same person. And it would have been too easy, I think. I wouldn't have learned things. And I think that's the purpose of life, is to learn and progress. And this experience has really opened my eyes and made me a better critical thinker and made me rely on the Lord. I would not press the button. Actually, I'd destroy the button, because I don't think we should be ashamed or want to be something we're not. Especially going back to what I said about how God created me this way. I think it's definitely a harder route, but it's been better for me to accept that and figure out how and why, rather than pretend I'm something I'm not.
That's powerful. We should destroy the button. Yeah. We shouldn't be ashamed.
Down with the button.
Down with the button. And down with being ashamed for how God created us, as you're so well articulating. Talk about resources, unless you want to talk about any other family. Let's transition to resources at BYU that were helpful to you. Books, other resources. This would be great for anybody else walking your road that's still closeted, or anybody that's trying to help people walking your road.
Yeah, BYU is interesting because, for me at least, it was hard to find resources at the beginning. And there was a lot of time where I thought I was the only gay person at BYU. And that was wrong.
It's lonely.
Yeah, it was lonely. And it was a false pretense, because that wasn't true. I found resources. I wish I wouldn't have to look so hard for them. I dream of a world where the resources come to the students. And because it's the same thing that happened with my sister. She came to me and gave me these hints and these opportunities. And that was a lot easier than me coming to her just point blank, if that makes sense. Resources at BYU, I went to the CAPS, the psychological services, especially when I was realizing that I was not in a good place. I signed up and I started going to therapy, and it saved me.
Good job.
It was amazing. I could look at my life through a different perspective and try to gain understanding with a professional. And my counselor was fantastic. He actually did his training specific to LGBTQ people.
Cool.
He's a great resource. And I've noticed that the CAPS is very, the psychological services within BYU is very okay with differing sexual orientations and or gender identities. They're fine with it and they're very helpful. That was a great resource for me. If you are at BYU, there's USGA, which is kind of like a separate group. It's not sanctioned by the university, but there's good people there. And it's kind of like a community. If you're looking for more of a community aspect, USGA is fantastic. In Circles in Provo, it's doing great work. I think it's geared more towards a younger audience, but not really. I mean, you can go there and find, like, there's a lot of the teachers and trainers there are around my age. It's just really nice, especially when you're coming out. I found it was so nice to be in places where I could come out and just be gay and not have it be an issue, have people know. It was almost like a little break from trying to hide. So USGA and Encircle are fantastic for that. I went to the Affirmation Conference. Affirmation's a great group, I think, and it accepts and honors people from all walks of life, and it was very diverse, and I never felt like anyone pressured me to live a certain way, and I think that's really important. I think Affirmation's a great resource, and it also has chapters nationally and internationally. So if you're in different areas, you can meet people. My biggest resource was my friends and my family. Honestly, they, at the end of the day, they're the ones who know Charlie. They know me and how I've been raised and all the nuances of my life. And so my sisters, my cousin, one of my roommates, my brother, those were my biggest resources personally. And that was nice, because I didn't always want to talk about how I was gay, because I also was Cosmo and I had two jobs and I was really busy and I was doing global supply chain and I was trying to take on different case studies. And so it was almost kind of like draining if I was always focused on the gay, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
And as I was just like, when I needed resources and needed to talk about it, my sisters know me. They understood me. And so I was glad I came out to them first, because it helped me feel more confident in these other resources when I need them. And I just think there's something beautiful about really knowing someone. Yeah.
It's great. Great resources. That's very helpful. Talk about being Cosmo.
I love being Cosmo.
Did you try out for this? I don't know how one becomes Cosmo.
Yeah. I saw a flyer. I was eating Taco Bell between classes my freshman year, and I saw a flyer at the Wilk. And it said Cosmo tryouts, and it was at 4:30 on that same day. And I wanted to try out, so I skipped my class. I went and got a physical real quick and went to tryouts and kind of was practicing with Cosmo team, kind of like training. But then I went on a mission, and so I wasn't actually Cosmo my freshman year. When I came back, I retried out and got on. Tryouts are grueling. It's so hard. They basically, for like 3 hours.
How many people try out?
Usually between 40 to 50, I think. It depends. There's tryouts every 6 months. And tryouts are so hard because essentially they just physically exhaust you. They get you to where you can't even hardly walk, between running and pull-ups and push-ups and sit-ups and handstand walks and handstand holds and bar hangs and sprints. It's all, they just make you tired. Then tryouts begin, because they want to make sure that you can do things when you're tired. And I mean, the suit's heavy, it's hot, it's sweaty. And so that's when tryouts begin, and they test your tumbling skills and your tricking skills and dancing and breakdancing and trampoline. And it's like this comprehensive overlook of your physical ability. It's hard. Honestly, like, it's every 6 months, and every 6 months I was like, no, because it's the hardest day. It's so hard. And then there's like callbacks, and we do it a couple times. So
how did you find out you were Cosmo for the first time? Is it an email, a phone call? Do you remember that moment? Because that's really cool.
No, they gave me an event. They were just like, hey, we need you to go do this appearance. And so my first Cosmo event was at an elementary school, like a no drugs assembly in, I think it was Spanish Fork. So that was my first Cosmo event. And so I was in the suit, and I was like, I think I did it.
I think I did it. Yeah. This is the real deal.
So, no, but being Cosmo is amazing. It was incredible to be able to connect with people on a personal level. And there's something powerful about, there's some sort of like underlying bringing together of humanity in sports, and especially at BYU, we're very loyal to this BYU brand, and there's so much commonality there. And it was cool to be able to embody that on such a public scale. And I was able to make a lot of people happy and do hospital visits and work with sick children and kids with special needs and terminal illness, and be able to do community outreach in this really amazing way, because nobody knew it was me. It kind of like encapsulated the perfect way to serve, because it wasn't Charlie serving, it was Cosmo serving, but it was me. And it kind of showed me the power of anonymous service. And that's the reason I didn't want to come out as Cosmo, because I liked having this, you know, like your left hand not know what your right hand was doing kind of thing. But I had it for 3 years. I was able to learn the importance of that.
Are most Cosmos Cosmo for 3 years?
I think it depends on when you try out and just when you graduate. I probably could have done another year, but I was ready to graduate. And so I just took a spring semester and finished.
How many hours a week does this take, or does it depend on this type?
It depends. Homecoming 2017 was the busiest week of my life, and forever will be, I've decided. It was horrible. It was great, but it just depends on the week. I'd say minimum 10 to 14, but maximum, like I said, homecoming was wild. And it was also when I did the big dance with the
cigarettes. Yes, that went famous.
It was the same week, so... it just kind of depend. A lot of time management, which I'm grateful for, because now I'm pretty good at time management.
Well, you bring honor to BYU as Cosmo, and you bring honor to BYU now, Charlie.
Thank you.
So thank you. And talk about, you know, you came out in this op-ed in the Desert News, and you talked about being Cosmo. Do you think you would have gotten the same level of support if you hadn't been Cosmo?
That's an interesting question because I have two answers, yes and no. Like I said, I was out before I did this op-ed. I was out to my entire family and my extended family. I told them right before it dropped, and all of my close friends. And so I did receive support, and I got to the point where I wasn't surprised to receive support, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But also I think the element of Cosmo, has added a lot more support. I think of, coming out to my dad, and traditionally he was very, anti-gay. I mean, he grew up in a tiny town in Missouri. It's just how it is, you know? And I don't blame him for that because, like, I totally was too. But when I came out to him, it really shifted him. And I kind of, like, gave a face to what being gay is. And I was someone he loved. And he was able to really shift and transition and kind of had this paradigm shift. And I think...
That's cool.
That happens a lot. When it's someone you love and trust, it's no longer the gays. And it's Charlie, or it's my brother, my cousin, my friend. And so it's been really interesting because Cosmo is beloved by people, in this character, and people kind of had a connection to me as this dancing Cosmo enigma. Right. And I think, so I don't think without Cosmo, I would have had support from some people. It's made people double think and double check. And I can say that confidently because I've had hundreds of messages from people telling me this. I wouldn't have even thought twice about this issue, except you took the time to take a picture with my dad with cerebral palsy.
Wow.
Things like that. And so it's been really interesting to use this platform to change people's perspectives.
It's like God has a plan here. And it's,
he really,
you know,
does.
My feeling is this is all part of your plan and God's plan, and this is not random. And you being Cosmo is part of your plan, and now coming out as gay and having people to connect on this issue, perhaps a little bit better because you're Cosmo. I think you recognize that's true, but it's good. It's a good thing. I won't read the op-ed, but I encourage our listeners to. I read part of the op-ed to the local, I spoke at the local high school seminary, and we talked about you and about half knew about you and the story, and I thought that was great, and I read some of the op-ed. So I encourage our listeners to read that. It's just very, very helpful about mask and taking off masks. So I thought thought that was something that was extremely well written. What can LDS members do to show support?
Similar what my sister was doing. Just do what my sister did. That's all. I mean, that's a great step one. Share this article, share another article, make comments of support. And like I said in this opinion editorial, I said the LGBTQ community needs visible love and support. We don't know. We can't read minds, you know. You have to be active and visible about this. I had a friend and actually this is the reason I went to USGA the first time at BYU is I had this girl that was in my ward 2 years prior, and we were friends on Facebook, and she shared a post from USGA. They did like a Faces, and it was someone's story. Yeah. And she posted this, and I saw it on Facebook, and immediately was like, oh my gosh, like, I know her and she's an ally. And I messaged her and I was like, hey, I need to meet with you. And I have some questions for you. And it's so funny because she thought I was going to ask her on a date.
This was just a cover to get a date.
Yeah. And it wasn't, obviously. But I was kind of awkward about it because I was like, we need to talk in private. And I was like, trust me, it'll be fine. Like, I'll explain. And so I told her I came out to her, and that's how she connected me with this resource, USGA, right? And so all she did was share an article. That's literally all she did. I didn't know her very well, but she positioned herself as an ally, someone that I could trust, someone that wasn't going to judge me. And she showed visible love and support. And I think that's what members of the church community can do to help. And it raises awareness. It makes people think. It starts conversations. And it brings this issue home. One of the most amazing things about writing this article and seeing people's responses is moms have said that they've shared this article and talked about this article in their house, and then their kids have come out to them.
That's cool.
Because it's kind of given an excuse to talk about it. People feel like it's so taboo. People feel like they need permission to bring this up. And I say no. I say bring it up, because this is happening. Like chances are your daughter or son or nephew or niece is gay or LGBTQ. Just statistically, that's how it is. And so we can't hide from this and make it this taboo thing, because that's when misunderstandings arise and that's when division happens. And aren't we so done with being divided?
We are. I'm struck with just how easy it is to do what you just suggested. It's not very hard. And I remember just the last year of being a singles ward bishop, I started to post some kind things about LGBTQ on my Facebook feed, and I was stunned with what happened. And a few kids came out to me, but a lot of the straight kids that had really difficult things they've never talked to anybody said, okay, I can talk to this guy, because if he's going to show love to a marginalized group, he's safe for me to talk to. So I think it's just a principle of the doctrine of Christ, is to show kind to people that have the hardest road, and then you're safe for other people to open up. And you needed to open up. You needed to talk about it, because it just helps you walk this road. So
yeah.
How do you balance being gay, Charlie, and being LDS?
That's the golden question, isn't it? As I said earlier, I'm really trying to focus on personal revelation and a relationship with Christ. I've worked really hard to separate church organizational structure from true gospel principles. And there's been things that have rocked my world, like this whole concept that God created me this way and it's part of who I am eternally. That's rocked my world. And that's not something that I was ever...
Meaning you believe that now. And
I believe
your personal
that now.
Revelation.
That's my personal revelation.
But it's hard to reconcile that with...
Well, it's not something that's taught in Sunday school.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you're going to church to find all the answers, I don't think that's ever going to happen. And especially with something like this, I was never going to learn in seminary that my sexual orientation was an integral part of my soul.
Right.
That's just not going to happen. And so... it's been great, honestly, because it's made me focus on truth and pull away from cultural differences and things like that. So right now, that's how I'm reconciling it. There's a lot of things I still have questions about and disagree with. But I also think, like I said, growing up, my faith and religion was such an integral part of who I am. And now I'm seeing that my sexual orientation is an integral part of who I am. And I believe that there's a way to honor both of those and keep both of those part of my life. I think society tells us it's not true. And people in their minds draw lines and create two different camps. But when we reduce it down to you're either gay or you're a member of the church, and you... That's
not helpful.
That's not helpful to anyone. And that creates division within the people themselves. And it creates division in families and in our community. And I don't think that's helpful. I don't think that's healthy. And I think we really need to try to reframe this and get out of this mindset of there's two ways. I think if we were able to reframe as a people, there'd be less judgment. There'd be less hurt. There'd be less miscommunication and misunderstanding. People, like, we have so much capacity for navigating gray, ambiguous areas and asking questions. The foundation of our religion is asking hard questions and seeking God for answers. And I think to say that we shouldn't, or to not do that because we're scared of either the process or the answers, I think is kind of a reduction of our humanity and who we are as children of God. I believe that God wants us to be critical thinkers and search and question and figure things out and be prayerful about it. And that's my advice. I never want anyone to look at me and say, oh, I should be doing that. I should be living this way. Because I think everyone's path is different and no one's path is finished. You know, like 3 years ago, did I ever think I'd be on this podcast talking about being gay? No.
No one's path is finished. That's really thoughtful.
No, but I mean, if we can take it a day at a time and just seek understanding in a relationship with Christ, I think he's going to lead us where we need to go. So that's how I'm doing it right now.
I like that answer, and I love the personal revelation and the hard work you're doing to get answers from God, and I just honor your answers, Charlie. I sort of frame this up, and is the church's relationship with its LGBTQ members is like a 20-chapter book, and we just have more chapters to write, and I think I can say that as a faithful member. We just have more work here, and I sometimes frame it up. I don't know what the last chapters are. I don't know what chapter we're in, but we just have more work to do, because I think, you know, I sometimes say a mom, if she becomes aware she's got a gay son at 13 and a straight son at 13, she should just as much hope for that kid in our society, in our church, as a straight kid. And right now, moms worry if they suddenly find out they have a gay kid. Their hopes and dreams, and if you are gay at age 13. So I just think chapter 20, which I don't know what it is, and I don't know if it and what that looks like, would make it so that hopes would be the same and healing would be the same, and the church would be the balm of Gilead equally for you, Charlie, as well as your brother.
Yeah, I think in just to kind of retrace what I said about me asking questions and relying on personal revelation, I want to caveat that everyone should be doing this.
Good.
If you're the straight person or the mom or the person who doesn't understand and just doesn't get any of this, you can pray too, and you can ask too. The same way that I had to ask about my sexual orientation, I think everyone should be doing that and seeking answers. Because if we're just going off what's been told or what society has promoted, there's a lot of learning and answers and healing that we're missing out on. And I think we should always be prayerful about what's presented to us and seeking truth and trying to really take away this skeleton of society and this framework of an organization, and really get down to the root of who is Christ and how does he feel about this. And I think if we're seeking those questions, we're going to get answers in our own time.
I like that. And sometimes I see an imbalance where, I mean, the institution of our restored church is a means to connect me with God and Christ. It should be the current underneath the water pushing me that way. And sometimes it becomes a life unto itself, where it sort of is the relationship, and our whole orientation with religion becomes the institution of the church. I don't think that's what our leaders want to have happen. I don't think it's a relationship with God and Christ.
Correct that. I would pull away from saying I don't think that's what our leaders want to saying I don't think that's what the Savior wants.
I agree.
Yeah.
And so you.
It's hard. It's really difficult.
But you're right. It applies to all of us as members of the church and as disciples of Christ. Charlie, when you think about the future, and I think sometimes of Elder Bednar's talk where it talks about there's a lot of fog in a lot of our futures, and rarely is that light switch moment where you know exactly how the future is going to fold out. And you, with fog, you can kind of only see the next step you've got to take, and you sort of take it. So when you think of your future as a gay Latter-day Saint and the different roads that are potentially open to you, how do you manage that?
When I returned from my mission and realized I was gay and it wasn't going to change, and this life that had been presented to me, this life ideal, this plan I had for my life didn't work out, it was really difficult to lose that. The idea that I'd be married to a woman and have a family and have a temple marriage and kind of be like fit in this box that I always thought I could fit in. When that didn't happen,
Probably a lot of grief.
A grief process.
I would think.
It was something I lost, something I had looked forward to since I was a child, you know, and I lost that. And I think in a way, to be completely honest, that's part of the reason I haven't really set long-term goals for myself. People say, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I say, I don't know, because it's never happened the way I've seen myself. You know, 5 years ago, I was on my mission and I thought that by now I'd be married and probably have a kid, and it didn't work. So I've almost moved away from setting these like set future plans of what I want and been trying to work through this one day at a time, 2 months at a time, and just rely on personal revelation and always reassess where I'm at and where I'm going and if I'm liking the direction I'm moving. And as I've been doing that, I've had a lot more peace and understanding. And I mean, it's hard to look at your life and kind of see this like nothing, like this blinder, this fog, as you were saying. But as I take steps forward, my path's being led. And I saw that in a very dramatic way this past week. When this article blew up, I figured it'd make kind of a splash, but I didn't think it would be this big. And even now, this week, a lot of different doors and opportunities have opened just because of this that I hadn't been able to see before. So that's my advice. If you're LGBTQ and you're worried about the future, I would say scale back and take it a day at a time. Consider the lilies of the field. They grow. That's in the Sermon on the Mount. It teaches us, you know, don't worry about what you're going to wear tomorrow, or just do what you know is right now, and God will take care of that. And it's difficult, but it builds a lot of trust in the Savior. And so that's what I'm trying to do with my future right now.
I like that. I like that you're going slow and being really thoughtful. That's advice I give to LDS LGBTQ people, is go slow. And I don't think that's a sign of weakness or a sign you don't know your path. You're not being true to your orientation. You're just working with God and taking it slow. And I think that's great. So, well done. A question came into my mind. Is your brother on a mission right now?
Yeah, he is. He's in Bolivia.
Why do you think him having a gay brother makes him a better missionary?
That's such a good question.
Because I think he's a better missionary.
He writes me about it all the time.
And I get tenderhearted. I think he's a better missionary having a gay brother.
He understands people more. I think when you're connected to something, I guess I don't have an exact answer, but I know he is, because he writes me all the time and he says, thanks for coming out to me, because I'm a better missionary because of it. I think he's able to see people and not judge people and see in a more Christ-like way. And I don't know how, and that's something that I don't get, you know what I mean? Cause I am the gay one. And
right.
So I never had this shift, but he has, and it's been beautiful. And he's also been able to change people's hearts and perspectives. He said there's been multiple times when other missionaries have said things or like really been hard on the issue. And he's been able to say, hey, guys, wait a minute, step back and think about this.
Correct.
This isn't an issue or an agenda. These are humans. These are souls. These are children of God. And he's been able to step back and look at things with more understanding and connect to people on a deeper level because of it.
I love that answer.
That's an interesting question. I'm glad you asked.
Because my premise, because it's happened for me, Charlie, is I am a more thoughtful disciple of Christ by having LGBTQ people in my life. I thought at first I was going to be the Samaritan kind of rescuing, and I do some of that. But now it's LGBTQ people rescuing me and teaching me Christ, teaching me better the doctrine of Christ and how to help other people. Empathy, compassion, understanding, less othering like Christ never did, or rarely did, maybe in the temple. But he didn't seem to other many people or on the margins. So I just sense that your brother is reaching people that he's because of you in his life. Talk about this weekend. You went skiing with just a bunch of friends. And is it fun sometimes just to have a bunch of friends you hang out and you're not the gay guy? You're just one of the bros.
Yeah, I am one of the bros. And I like to be one of the bros because that's kind of, I mean, we talk about labels and I'm labeled as gay and all my friends are straight. All my close friends anyway.
All your close friends are straight.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And that's the beauty of it.
Matter.
It just doesn't matter. And so, I mean, this whole week has been inundated with interviews and people talking to me and texts and messages, hundreds, and it's been crazy. So on Saturday, I just texted my buddies and I was like, hey, we're going skiing and I don't want to talk. I don't want anyone to even say the word gay. I just want to ski and be, you know? And I think that's important too. Just, you don't have to act a certain way because you identify a certain way. Just, I want to identify as Charlie and act like Charlie. And that has components for sure. My sexual orientation, my religion, my talents, my interests, what I'm working on, what I'm reading. I mean, we're conglomerate people, but I'm Charlie at the end of the day, and that's who I want to be.
And I like that. I like that, you know, that's one of the things I think we've matured. I couldn't do that at your age, Charlie. I mean, if I were one of your straight friends going back to my days at BYU, I wouldn't have known how to navigate this. I probably would have separated myself. And I like that your straight friends are not separating themselves from you. And it's not, and their homophobia is down or non-existent. They just see you as a bro.
Yeah, I'm Charlie.
They see your gifts and attributes and just enjoy being with you. And that makes me happy. And I hope we can model that into our congregations and our families, because I think that's what Christ would want. So thank you, Charlie, for taking the time. I know you're in town for a short week and you've just wall-to-wall interviews. And so we're so grateful to our listeners for taking some time and joining us. Do you have any other last thoughts for our listeners?
Be visible. Thanks for listening. I mean, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of not answers, but I think the answers are out there. And I'm really grateful for people stepping up. And I think I've had to walk in this gray area being gay a lot. And I'm really grateful for people who do fit the mold, for lack of a better term. I'm grateful for them stepping out of their comfort zone because it makes a huge difference. And so thank you. That's my final thought.
That's a great thought. On behalf of all of our listeners, Charlie Bird, thanks for joining us. Thanks for the man you are, the Christ-like disciple you are, and your courage to come out and how that helps so many. And you've blessed thousands of lives of Cosmo. You've blessed hundreds of lives on your mission in California, and you're blessing thousands of lives. You just share your story so we can have these needed conversations. And it is part of Heavenly Father's plan. I sometimes see all these puzzle pieces, and the longer we get down the road, all the puzzle pieces sort of start to fit together and make sense. So I'm honored to know you, Charlie, and thanks for all of us for joining us, all of our listeners, for another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.